is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is the top of the hour here, VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross, right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. He's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm going to try to get out there and swing those sticks today, get a workout in here. It's a beautiful day on a Tuesday morning on the 6th of January already. I can't believe it. This new year already starting to fly by. We're going to get to college football. We got the national semifinals coming up starting on Thursday night. We've got the wild card weekend coming up with six games. Jensen, so much to look ahead to on the football front. I don't know that that's where you're going to go, but we're going to find out now because it's time on this Tuesday to get to our chaos candidates. All right, Jensen, I believe you have won the toss today. You've elected to receive for the first chaos candidate of the day. And again, could be any sport. I'm curious where you're going on this Tuesday.
I'm going wild card weekend weather. A little alliteration there for those of you scoring at home. And Dave, a unique setup. We don't have one game indoors. Thank you for this setup. And also a dichotomy of weather on Saturday as well. Forecast right now in Charlotte, it probably similar to where you are, but it's going to be a bit warmer. 68 degrees, clouds a little bit, but most sunshine there when we get to kickoff. So you feel that the track should be fine. Doesn't look like there is really too much wind. We might get a little bit of a drizzle after halftime. But if that is the case, the precipitation does not look crazy at all. The nightcap, though, remember, we talked about toughest stadiums and environments to be able to kick field goals. That's going to be the case there for Soldier Field. We're expecting some gusty conditions. It's going to be frigid, below freezing, probably right around 30 degrees at kickoff and only going south from that. It is looking like the wind does pick up in the second half. So, boy, oh, boy, that's going to be fascinating to see coaching decisions from there. Duval County, 70 and mostly cloudy, so no big deal there. In the city of Brotherly Love, partly cloudy, 41 degrees. And then Chargers and Patriots on Sunday night. That's going to be an interesting one. In and around, you know, some cold, but also what will the wind look like there? And then no shock on Monday night. It's cold in the Steel City. And what will those kickers look like there at Acrisure Stadium? I am loving what could be a chaos candidate for the weather this wild card weekend.
I love that. And I love this is the way football ought to be. And it's sadly, it's going to be a thing of the past. But to have all these games outdoors, as you've outlined, the football gods are smiling down on us this weekend. That's for sure. I'm going to stay right there with you for my first chaos candidate. And it is going to be in wild card weekend, of course. And it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. And it's interesting, you know, you win that game and he was unbelievable in the fourth quarter against the Ravens without DK Metcalf, no running game, and yet figured out a way, just used his brain to figure out a way to manipulate that Ravens defense. And I look at it now, they're asking him about retirement. You can just tell, and I mentioned it last week before this game, that this is the reason why Mike Tomlin goes out there and pairs up with an Aaron Rodgers. They want to prove everybody wrong. They want to show that the old man still has plenty left in the gas tank, that he can outsmart you with his football brain and the arms and the legs, while it might be different these days, is still good enough to get the job done. No disrespect to CJ Stroud. But if you're Aaron Rodgers, and I know that's a great defense you're going up against, he's licking his chops, much like he did against the Ravens. He is looking forward to proving people wrong. And every time they win and win a division and or a wild card game, people are going, oh, we got to deal with Rodgers for another week. I think he loves this. I think this is exactly why he has not retired as of yet. And I think Aaron Rodgers against the Texans and maybe, dare I say, beyond, could really be an agent of chaos in this wild card weekend in the AFC. Just something to look forward to here if they can get by the Texans. By the way, when you're watching these football games and you want a little bit of flavor with your football, well, check out our friends over at Omaha Steaks. They are the official sponsor of tailgating. And right now, when you spend $129, you can score 2 pounds of fully cooked chicken wings plus 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com/VSIN. So don't wait. Spend $129. Get 2 pounds of wings. Save 50% site-wide on steaks and more at omahasteaks.com/VSIN. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. There is a minimum purchase, and see the site for the details. Your chaos candidate number two, are we sticking with football?
Yes, it's NFL officiating. We do not tune in for the officials, yet we have had so much of them this year that you know it is bound to enter into a critical decision for one of, if not a handful, of these wild card games, the divisional round, the conference championship, the Super Bowl. Let's face it, man, it has been one of the real stains on this season. Games getting drawn out, just really flags littered everywhere. At this point, I hope they let these guys play. I hope the physicality is allowed to come out a little bit. So get out of the way. But unfortunately, Dave, I don't see any end in sight for the boys in the pinstripes here to be a focal point, or at least make themselves part of the game when they really should not be.
All right, let's expand on this a little bit, because I'm right there with you. You know me. I like to bang on these officials. I will tweet at them at NFL officiating. If they're going to be in the public square, we get to banter back and forth. And the way I look at this has been a problem that the league has. They didn't create it, but they've made it continually worse as the decades have gone on. And I do go back to a couple central moments, one being the Dez catch, no catch against Green Bay. That's over a decade ago now. Okay. And since that time, they've gotten it worse. They've switched the rules since then to what is a catch. Now that would have been a catch. It shows you right there the inherent problem with what they've done with replay. They've made it more convoluted. Jensen, in a Lewis Ross administration, I think a day one EO is, you and I are going to get to that rule book and we're going to strip it down, man. We're going to make it much less convoluted. And I think what you're having is the speed of the game is always the cop out here. I think it's the rule book of the game that's getting these guys that have to then interpret what these new rules are. You and I talk about it every offseason with the competition committee. Something I go back to Michael Lombardi with as well on this network, that I think the competition committee's got to help these officials out, make the game simpler, the game that we all know what it is. We know what a catch is. We all know when we see it. Instead of, well, was that a football move? With one step in this, whether it's the end zone versus the field of play, it's different. Let's make the rules simpler, because this is not a hard thing to correct, and yet the NFL keeps making it more convoluted each and every year. I'll get off the soapbox there. My chaos candidate here, Jensen, we're going to go to the college football playoff in the semifinal round now, and it's Pete Golding. All of a sudden, the story, right, well, okay, what are they going to do without Lane Kiffin? And now here's a guy that basically said, Jensen, I don't even want this job. He liked being the D coordinator. He was not lobbying for Lane Kiffin's job. But when Lane exited stage left and somehow thought, I should have the right to keep coaching this team, doesn't work that way, Lane. And then Pete Golding saw that the other candidates that they were going to talk to, and he went, whoa, 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 whoa. If you're going to bring in these guys, then forget that. I am the guy for the job. I like that, Jensen. I like that something got in his head that said, if it's not going to be Lane, I don't need this job. Oh, and then I see the other people that you're now considering. Oh, then I do need the job. These kids need me. 3.5-point dogs. Yes, it's a great narrative. Pete Golding, if he can go on and lead Ole Miss to a national championship without Lane. We've seen it done before. I go back to Bill Frieder with Michigan in the NCAA tournament, and he left for Arizona State, and he said, hey, I want to coach these kids through the tournament. Michigan said, no, you leave. You don't want to be here. We don't want you here. Kind of like Tua Tagovailoa, but I digress. And then he went to Arizona State and watched some guy named Steve Fisher take over his basketball team and win a national championship. Pete Golding now is stepping up to the plate for Ole Miss. I like to see it. He can be that agent of change here. Miami's going to be really tough out. But if they win it, you know Pete Golding's going to be saying, why not us, boys? And that's why I stuck around, and that's why I'm going to be your coach in the next year, too, and for years to go. Jensen, I think he's got a real shot here to make this not just a narrative about Lane, but make it more about Pete Golding in Ole Miss.
I think you look at the endorsement for Pete Golding in just what's happened in the last week or so of players that, I can't believe we say this in college athletics now, re-signed – that are current members of the team, and then others that have signed to play for Ole Miss. That is as huge an endorsement as you can get, that they have the right guy in-house. And I mean, you are one win away from making that the stamp of approval for sure.
It's amazing. We're going to break down these games here in the next segment in detail. Both these games now sitting at 3.5. So that's significant line movement there. But Jensen, what are your thoughts on that very quickly about the officiating? Because I do look at that and I'm right there with you. These games, we don't want them to be over officiated. And I always say, when in doubt, don't throw the flag. And I know that some people go, oh, that's pass interference, so you can't like, to me, I'm kind of a let them play guy. And I'll be very upfront, whether it's a wager or not, I'm going to tell you, hey, I might be on that side, but I hate that call. I've seen a lot of that. Don't you like it more when they just let the guys play?
Well, I mean, that's what you asked for. And you want the right calls. You don't want calls to be missed. Remember where we were at the beginning of the year. The whole argument was about whether the tush push was legal. And here we are right now. Still can't figure out what pass interference is. Still can't figure out, you know, what a false start is or neutral zone infractions. Like, I mean, yeah, the illegal formations, like it is, there's a lot here. Like just sit back. There's something about the XFL many moons ago for anyone that remembers where it was like no refereeing and it was just guys just going after each other. Not to say we need that, but hey, referees need to be secondary. Let the players play.
Yeah. And again, I'm not advocating for muggings out there for, you know, for DBs on wide receivers. I know this was all changed back in the Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison against the Patriot days. Mike Vrabel knows that very well, but there's got to be a happy medium. Let's talk college football semifinals and get a primer next right here. Beeson by the book. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge, but what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis, and we have a lot to get to here with the college football national semifinals coming up here on Thursday night to kick that off. But we do have some breaking news, both from the college and the professional ranks. Let's start off with the college, since we're just talking a little college football there. And UCF quarterback Byrum Brown is now committed to Auburn. Boy, don't you love this part of it, Jensen? Per his agency. Per the agency. This comes from Pete Thamel on X. So he's going to follow his coach from USF there, Alex Golish, to Auburn, and will be among the highest paid players in the sport next year. I look back at the people historically in college football that we ostracized for doing it the wrong way. This is just the wild, wild west, man. Per his agency, Jensen, we're going to Auburn with the head coach.
Yeah. I mean, again, on the heels of Brendan Sorsby, right, reportedly at Texas Tech is going to be north of $5 million a year. Like, what are we doing? And also, just coming out about an hour ago, I believe, speaking of Auburn, Ashton Daniels, if you remember him at the end of the year, had the spot start there for Auburn as they were resting, their quarterback to be able to be ready for the Iron Bowl. Ashton Daniels is now transferring to Florida State. And that's a big one there, considering now that we have kind of that domino. Byrum Brown going to come over for Alex Golish, be the head quarterback, or at least the starting quarterback for Auburn. So a little domino falling there as well.
Okay, this is buckle up for certain fan bases out there in the country. This is a moment we've kind of been waiting for. I call it Liberation Day for the Dallas Cowboys. Matt Eberflus has been relieved of his duties as a defensive coordinator. Look, this is nothing personal. I hope Matt Eberflus can find work in the league, but Adam Schefter is reporting that he is gone, and the Cowboys now going to be looking for their fourth defensive coordinator in the last 4 years. So it's been high turnover there. you're going back to Mike Zimmer. Of course, Dan Quinn did a great job there before he got the head coaching job with the Commanders in D.C. So when you go from Quinn to Zim for one and now Eberflus for one, I do like this move because it clearly did not fit. If you're just being objective about it, you could see that the scheme and the players were not matching, and you can't get rid of the players, so you have to get rid of the scheme. I'll be very curious to see now what Brian Schottenheimer does from a head coaching perspective, because Jensen, this, I think everybody realizes that Jerry got that right. He got Brian Schottenheimer right. I don't think anybody's debating that today after year one of the Schottenheimer, the mini Marty, if you will, there in Dallas. I think it worked out quite well from the offensive side of the ball. But in order to bet this team next year, they got to fix that side. And I don't think you could do the square hole in a round peg type deal. You had to change it up. And to me, this should be exciting for Cowboy fans. Eberflus's scheme might work in Indianapolis or somewhere else. I'm not saying now. They got a pretty good one there currently. But back in the day, it worked in Indianapolis. It was not working in Dallas. This says to me that Jerry Jones, Brian Schottenheimer, they're trying to create, they're trying to correct a problem that they addressed after 1 year.
If you are a DVOA disciple here in football, again, defense adjusted value over average, the Dallas Cowboys this past year, Dave, finished with the fourth worst defense in the history of DVOA. The Cincinnati Bengals were on this list for much of the season, but they actually got better in December. So just to kind of back up your idea there that it was a glaring hole and then some. So anxious to see who they bring in this offseason.
Brian Flores. Oh, excuse me. Just had to get that out. I mean, like, if Brian Flores wants to still be a coordinator and he wants to leave Minnesota, you know, the Gannons of the world, the Jonathan Gannons that are out there, there are going to be upgrades out there. And it's not just those head coaching six spots that are still current. It's going to be those tentacles now, defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators. Can you get those guys? Those are huge hires when you're looking at the futures market. Those numbers will be posted next month. Dallas, you're on the clock. Let's go get one. There are some guys to be gotten out there. Let's get back to the national semifinals here. Going to start in just about 48 hours, if you can believe this, with Miami against Ole Miss. We talked about Pete Golding in the last segment. I really am impressed with stepping up in what we've seen out of Ole Miss here in the first two games of the college football playoffs. So he's got two wins already. Because, Jensen, we didn't know what it was going to look like. It does look a lot better. And I think the same could be said for Mario Cristobal. Look, you know me. I was looking to bet Ohio State live. It didn't get home. And part of that handicap for me, and I even tweeted it to you or texted it to you, was I just don't trust Mario Cristobal. Where are we now? I don't know that we can fully say that, you know, Pete Golding's a made man or any stretch of the imagination there. But it has looked pretty darn good in the first two. Have we turned the corner on Cristobal? Because that's a great win, not a good one, a great win against Ohio State last week.
Yeah, I mean, program defining or a program reborn is yes. The way you look at it. You take out the defending national champions in the manner that you did, Dave. I think let's underline that because in talking with so many Buckeye people, it is the most physical that they've been the most physicality they've faced, the most they've been manhandled, particularly at the offensive line. Remember, that was a huge part of my handicap. Was I had watched enough Buckeye football to know that Indiana exposed a major weakness. The front seven was the best front seven, even comparatively to Indiana, that Ohio State was going to face all year. Now the problem that Miami faces is containing as dynamic a dual threat quarterback as they face all year in Trinidad Chambliss. So you have to account, and where I think Ole Miss will try and limit the pass rush of both Reuben Bain and on the opposite side, you have to account for where Trinidad Chambliss will just tuck it and go. And so that, to me, is one of the parts here where I think you can get to Ole Miss. If there are 3.5 still out there, I would jump on it if I were you. It's going to be purely because of where my future ticket is with Miami. Mm-hmm. This is purely a hedge play, and I'm going to try and double dip, try and get both across the line. In my heart of hearts, do I think Miami can win this game? At, you know, basically the last possession. Yeah, I could see that happening, but I am not taking away. Remember Ole Miss, they were a team we circled at the beginning of the year, Dave. We talked futures that really stood out in a very crowded SEC. Ole Miss's number, I felt, was way too long to not at least have something on them in your portfolio. This is a team that is really believing that they not only belong, but that they can be a national champion.
In the last segment, as we were going to break, and I mentioned the numbers were changing, you could have gotten three and a hook on Ole Miss. Hooks are gone. I just craned my neck around here at Circa at the Mint Gaming Hall here in Franklin, Kentucky. It's down to three. Juice to the Miami side now minus $1.20. Seeing the same thing now on DraftKings. It's down to three.
Yep.
So those hooks have been eaten up in the middle of our show here today. I think they heard you, Jensen, saying if you can still get those three and a halves out there in Ole Miss, you probably want to scoop those up. They feel like they've been scooped up. The other game is the one that I thought we were going to see maybe line movement the other way. It is not. It's coming back now towards the way of the duck. So this is down to 3.5 today for that madman known as Kurt Cignetti there on the sideline, side eye, as he looks down the line here for Indiana and the intimidation factor that he brings. Look, Dan Lanning knows these two guys have been just heaping the praise on one another. And I don't think it's contrived. I think it's actually a mutual respect that, you know, Cignetti said this week, Jensen, it's really tough to beat a team twice. He's referencing his team going to Eugene and beating them up the first time around. Dan Lanning, nothing but praise for Cignetti and Indiana, the way he's built this football team in no short order. What do you make of this money move towards Oregon here as we talk on a Tuesday?
Well, again, I know I had brought it up earlier about teasing in these spots here, getting Oregon up to 9.5. I have to take away a lot of what we just saw in Oregon limiting a Texas Tech Red Raider offense that had routinely put up 40 plus points. You have to remember where that is. Now, Indiana took advantage of Alabama, who was kind of a wounded duck, if you will, the way they were no run game whatsoever. That's not going to be the case when you face Oregon. Multifaceted backfield, Dante Moore, when he needs to, it's not a primary weapon for him, but when he needs to, can use his feet to extend some drives. God, this feels like I would really have liked to gotten four for Oregon. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near there. It's not coming back. And I still, on the flip side, how do you get away from backing the hottest team in college football right now? I mean, it feels, Dave, this feels like what I watched with Ohio State last year. On a mission, supremely talented on both sides in all three facets. It just feels like Team of Destiny stuff here with the Hoosiers. I won't play anything just yet. I'll probably wait and see where we are on Thursday when we do this show. But hard not to like Indiana to at least win the game, if not cover that 3.5.
Guilty as charged. I played a bad number. I played Indiana minus -4. The reason why we do these exercises of hold or fire is we're trying to be anticipatory of where the line's going to move. I actually thought it would go the other way, and it didn't. So it's come back down now. And I do understand to a degree that Oregon was, about a 7-point favorite in Eugene the first time around. So this is a change of about 10, 11 points in the marketplace. So I get that part of it. But, yeah, I played Indiana minus -4. I feel like I'm sitting on a number it's not going to go back up to 4. I think you're right. It's 3.5, maybe even 3s. But at that point, I think Indiana money would certainly come back in. Let's get to some of Steve Mackinnon's Super Bowl contender criteria. That is next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue the Tuesday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. If you've missed any part of this buying program, remember, like, subscribe to VSiN by the Books podcast, and you can listen on your time. And of course, we thank everybody watching on FanDuel Sports Network, listening on Sirius XM channel 158. I always make it a point to listen throughout the day here as much as I can. Jensen Lewis, let's get to some great numbers here brought to us by some really smart people on the network. That's where we're going to begin today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
We're going to kick off the second season in the NFL. That's going to begin in earnest on Saturday with a couple games there, 3 on Sunday, 1 more on Monday night to round out wildcard weekend. You have dug into the numbers because a very smart man on the network, Midwestern's Finest, has done the work here. Jensen, what did you find that you like?
One of our great friends and colleagues, Steve Mackinnon, does just a bang up job, and not only football season, but also for our March Madness betting guide in identifying championship DNA, if you will. And he has done it again for you this year. If a VSiN Pro subscriber, if you've not been to the website just yet, this article is up. And basically, it's 27 traits that Steve Mackinnon has identified. Theoretically, the more of the criteria that a team has, the better their resume to make a run at getting to the Super Bowl, if not winning it. Combinations of power rankings, game-by-game statistics, ATS cover percentage, etc. And of the 27, one team qualified in all 27 of the criteria. That is the Los Angeles Rams. Now, right behind them, Dave, 26 of the 27 were the Seattle Seahawks. I find the AFC ones, which ironically are the next two in the qualifying metrics, to be the Patriots and the Jags. Patriots 24 of 27, the Jaguars 22 of 27. Now, if you want to play some Super Bowl exactas, thinking perhaps we have the finalists there, and just kind of depending on how wildcard weekend shakes out, that will obviously dictate who the one seeds will face. But right now, if you play some of the exactas, here's what you'd have of those four teams. Seahawks, Patriots, Super Bowl is 11-1. Rams, Patriots, 14-1. Seahawks, Jags, 15-1. Rams, Jags, 20-1. But I do find it really intriguing, and I have used Steve's, especially for March Madness, the kind of chart that he used, the qualifying criteria. I have used that wholeheartedly when I fill out my bracket, because it kind of helps you sift through maybe that Cinderella feeling you want to have, the emotional reaction to 12s over fives. This is phenomenal stuff. But of those four teams, Dave, are you shocked that the Denver Broncos as the one seed is not in the top four?
A great point, because Steve's numbers there with those four teams that you've identified, there's only five teams right now that have single digits to win the Super Bowl. The last being the Eagles that did not make the list at plus 950. So the other four that are on Steve's list, Seahawks and Rams are the top two betting choices here at plus 330 and plus 425. The Patriots sneak in at 9-1 to just get under that double digits. It's the Jaguars at 13-1 to win the Super Bowl that meets Steve's criteria. So if you're looking for a longer shot play that meets the criteria, it's Duval that would get you the best number at 13-1. Very interesting stuff there. What do you have in a numbers game? Of course, a show that if you're watching and listening is going to come up next year with Gail Alexander and Kelly Bidlin.
We appreciate so much because Gil and Kelly both listen and watch our show every single day as they get ready for ours. So we'd be remiss if we did not mention, the two spot in the order, Dave, in Major League Baseball is usually your most all around best player, best hitter. And we would advocate that that Gil and Kelly fill that role quite well. So a numbers game as it refers to the wild card weekend, Dave, and maybe just an overall view of the NFL playoffs. Since 2017, the overall view, underdogs cashing at a 61% rate against the number, 60-38. Underdogs of 3 points or fewer, even better, 26-10 at 72%. Now, wild card weekend underdogs, 24-12, Dave, at 67%. And the doozy for me, since 2016, so now a decade of data, wild card home underdogs, 6-4 straight up, but 8-2 against the number. So again, if you're looking at where that trend is live, you have the Panthers plus 10, you have the Jags plus 1.5, and you have the Steelers plus 3. If you believe the wild card home underdog ATS history repeats itself here again this weekend.
I mentioned off the top of the show, I was asked such a simple question. I walked into work today from one of our security guards who just asked me point blank, who's going to win between the Packers and the Bears? Clearly, the odds makers don't know either, because this is flipped. To your point, Jensen, we had four home dogs earlier in the week. That is now flipped. The Bears have flipped back to the home favorite, and it's gone up to 1.5 in some spots. So you're seeing pick them on your screen if you're watching on FanDuel. Boy, Jensen, how many times do we mention this? That you can go to one book right now and find a pick 'em price. You can go to another and get 1.5 on Green Bay as a road dog now. So this number has been all over the map, as much as 3 points either way, to a point and a half dog, to a point and a half favorite. I just wonder very quickly, Jensen, are we done with the Bears money, or might we see twos out there in the marketplace before we get to kickoff?
Yeah, I'll probably wait till the weekend. Again, this is also going to be beginning of monetizing my 60-1 NFC future for the Chicago Bears. I am hoping, and maybe I'll do a double dip. I'll probably go grab some Green Bay plus 1.5 right now, just to be able to have that. May include the teaser side as well. Again, yes, we've talked about this a lot, especially just kind of knowing where we are with Jacksonville. And we just talked about home underdogs being able to cover at an 80% rate since 2016. So likely it'll be two bets for me, a standalone at the Packers plus 1.5 to be able to monetize already the 60-1. And then maybe a little double dip option, teasing the Packers up to 7.5 and probably the Jags up to 7.5 as well.
Exactly where I was going. And when the question was posed, my initial reaction was going to be, hey, just tease up whoever's getting a point and a half either side. And then I realized not everybody's into the weeds like we are in these numbers. And then it came back to the simple brass tacks: who's going to win the game? And I still don't have an answer for that simple question. Sometimes the officiating, we've talked about it here, can make a big difference, Jensen. You've actually scouted out some numbers and officials that we're going to see and where they're going to be calling and which games they've got.
This was something notable in scouting reports for me as a reliever, Dave, especially when we got into the postseason, of home plate umpires and their strike zones, and just kind of knowing if they're a little bit tighter or if they're a little more lenient. Here are just the team records by the referees who will be in these wild card matchups. Cleet Blakeman gets the opener, Rams Panthers, both teams under 500 when he's been the referee. Adrian Hill, the nightcap. The Packers 2-1, Bears 2-5. Take for that what you will. Brad Allen starts our first trend. 9-4, the Buffalo Bills are straight up when he is the referee. The Jags under 500 at 6-8. But the one that stands out the most, Allen Eck, native of Pennsylvania.
Oh,
the Niners
Allen
are 3-6. The Eagles are 8-1. Ron Torbort going to be up there in Foxborough. Chargers are under 500, 5-7. Patriots 7-4. By the way, a lot of penalties and Ron Torbort officiated games. Just throwing that out there. And then Craig Rolstad on Monday. Texans 6-5. Steelers 8-4. Take for that what you will. But I thought it was pretty stark when you look at the Allen Eck 8-1. The Eagles.
Wow.
Wow.
Doesn't make me feel great about my Niners plus 4.5 when we see that, Jensen. It takes me back. If you go back to the old NFL films, and the Sable family just did great work with that for decades. If it got you into football for some of us here way back in the day, there's an old clip of Jerry Glanville as they're getting ready to play. He's the head coach at the time with the Falcons, getting ready to play a game in Dallas. And he asks an official before the game, he's just kind of talking him up on the sideline. He's mic'd up and he says, "Where are you from?" And the official says, "Dallas." He goes, "Dallas? How in the hell did I get a Dallas official down here?" He goes, "Are you neighbors with Jerry Jones?" Like, it is classic stuff, you know, like where all of a sudden you feel like, my goodness, you already have it in for me. We haven't even kicked off the game yet. I hope that's not what the Niners are thinking about. But Jensen, if you know it, you know they know it. You know Kyle Shanahan knows that, right? At some point, you got to go up to Allen and be like, "Hey, we're calling this thing square, right? This thing straight up the middle. Like, just whatever call you give them, give to us. That's all we ask. Let's call it even, right? That's all you have to ask for."
Yep. I'll echo it only from personal experience. There were a handful of umpires I knew that were tight. And I had our catcher, when I'd come in the game, I said, "Make sure you remind him where I like to put it. And if he's not going to call it there, you better let me know before this inning gets underway."
Jensen Lewis is a very nice person, people. You don't want to make him angry. If you're not giving him a call on the black, if you sit in the black, you got to call that a strike, Blue. Let's get it done. Let's get to our best bets. And by the way, Jensen, I've got some baseball futures that I've already got in pocket. I can't wait for you to tell me if it's a good play or bad play. That's next right here. VSiN by the books.
Tuned in to V VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you on a Tuesday. We talked about six coaching vacancies right now in the NFL. There are two GM positions that are open currently. Jensen, you're seeing some reports out there that maybe the Bears front office could be potentially raided with an assistant GM right now to Ryan Poles that could possibly be on the move. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, it sounds like Ian Cunningham, assistant GM there in Chicago, is potentially going to get an interview with the Atlanta Falcons. Where's the connection? Ryan Poles, who, as we know, is the current GM of the Chicago Bears, played with Matt Ryan at Boston College. And we know the rumor from yesterday that Matt Ryan potentially is going to get that a job as the president of ops there to oversee the hiring of the next general manager. So Cunningham has been finalists in years past, Dave. Let's underline that part for other GM openings. So maybe the timing is right for all of these sort of stars to align for him to head down to the ATL.
I love the way you're connecting those dots, going back to the BC days for those guys. And relationships, as you know, in any business are pretty much everything. Also, we mentioned that there's six coaches, and I texted to you guys yesterday. There's always one bombshell. There hasn't been a bombshell yet in the coaching ranks so far in this offseason for some. And I always say I like to wait till the postseason is done, because just because you're in the postseason doesn't mean that they're necessarily safe and or could leave in their own accord. And I get to that, whether it's John Harbaugh in Baltimore, of course, they did not make the postseason, or Mike Tomlin with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Tomlin and Aaron Rodgers could be joined at the hip, and we don't know if that's going to be a one-year experiment and then they're done. There are reports out there, Jensen, that Tomlin is being suited by TV to get out of the coaching ranks and make that transition to a second career, where it feels like he would be a natural because he's very glib and he says what's on his mind a lot here from Mike Tomlin. We always say he's the king of the press conference. That's for sure. He commands those things. What do you make of those reports that maybe Tomlin has already got one eye on leaving Pittsburgh anyway?
I mean, if you're going to start offering north of $7-8 million right now, as CBS has Tony Romo as their number one analyst, he makes $18 million a year. We know what Tom Brady makes over at Fox with his gargantuan deal. So Romo's deal is up in 2030. If you're doing the math, would they have their heir apparent? Listen, JJ Watt has been a joy to listen to. He and Ian Eagle do a great job on CBS. Anxious to see. I'm sure it's out. I haven't seen it, which game they're getting here over the weekend. Mm-hmm. But remarkable that Mike Tomlin here, what, 19 years in Pittsburgh. Is this it? Regardless that they've made the playoffs or not, we shall see.
Remember Jimmy Johnson when he left the Cowboys voluntarily, by the way. He says he left. Jimmy, was he fired? Well, who knows? Did some TV, then came back and did the Dolphins, and then went back to TV. That could be, Mike Tomlin's still a very young man. So is John Harbaugh, by the way. So if those guys decided to step aside for whatever reason, do some TV, does not mean necessarily that their coaching careers will be done. But I'm sure once they get a taste of that good life and that TV money, and maybe not as much hard work that they have to do week in and week out in the NFL, it might change their perspective. We'll get to some of our college football plays, NFL as well. But Jensen, there are futures out there for Major League Baseball. I couldn't wait to run some of these by you. You know I like to identify certain teams like we did the Reds last year. That was a big moneymaker for us. We try to give these out early because they have been actionable, and you and I definitely were in the black last year with our ROI on baseball futures. One team that I can't stay away from, and I'm going back to the well, it was the only future miss that I had last year. 82.5 was the win total. They got 82 wins. Came up a win short. I'm going back to the well on the Kansas City Royals. Over 81.5. They've lowered it just a little bit. I still like the rotation a lot. You got to hope that that Cole Reagans is going to be back to being Cole. Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Michael Lorenzen. I really like Chris Bubich. I hope they don't deal him. That's my only concern there. I like the young nucleus of the infield. Got to see what Jack Kags can do this year, if he's really going to be a difference maker. But obviously, you got a budding superstar there. And not only in Bobby Witt Jr., but I really like what they're getting out of Mike L right now. I really think you can look at a player like that and say they've got a chance with Garcia to have two budding superstars in Bobby Witt Jr. I like the lineup. I think they'll hit more, and that's why I'm playing them over 81.5 and to make the postseason at 2-1. Haven't done the divisional prices yet, but I really like this Royal squad. What do you make of that play?
Phenomenal. I was very high in them. Love what they've done in the bullpen already this offseason. Again, if Cole Reagans doesn't get hurt early last year and they don't have as horrid of an offensive start overall that they did, more than likely they're right in it with the Tigers. And I don't think we're getting a repeat of the Tigers storming out of the gates here offensively. They have a lot of questions. And hey, we don't even know if Tarek Skubal is going to be a member of the Detroit Tigers by the time we get to opening day. Love the price. I think that win total is very attainable. Again, remember, only 88 wins is what it took. And that was the Guardians going on a 2-month run, a historic comeback. One of the greatest in divisional history, behind 15.5 games. The Tigers absolutely ran out of gas at the end, even though they did beat Guardians in the wild card round. So Royals 82-80 last year, that over win total 81.5. I absolutely love it, buddy.
All right. My other one very quickly, I'm going to take a roll of the dice on the A's. I love the lineup. Jensen, I don't know about the pitching. They've got to figure out something there, but at 75.5 for the lineup, that looks like they're going to score a ton of runs in Sacramento this year. Going to play that over. If they can figure out the pitching, then I'm going to play that long shot at 4-1 to make the postseason. I don't think they can win the division. I think it'd have to be the wild card route, but what do you make of the A's? I just feel like they're a team ready to win potentially 80 games or more.
Think about it, man. Just 76-86 last year. So you're not asking him to do a heck of a lot more than what they already did a year ago. Nick Kurtz, Shea Langeliers, Tyler Soderstrom, who just inked his extension, Brent Rooker, who had his extension 2 years ago. They trade for Jeff McNeil. They had probably the rookie of the year at one point in Jacob Wilson before Kurtz did his 30-plus homer campaign. Lawrence Butler signed his extension a couple of years ago. The other Max Muncy plays third base for them. The lineup is going to be great. It is going to be automatic overs if the books don't adjust early for us for home games in Sacramento. Remember, we were one of the first people to be able to advocate for that. We're going to go right back to the well. As long as they're not tens out of the chute, I think we're going to be in business for some early athletics overs for individual games.
I cannot wait for your Daily Diamond each and every day right here in this program. That's going to be coming up before we know it, people. And again, we don't know if Steve Cohen, if our brain trust here and Bill Adie and Brian Musburger, if we're going to do another baseball draft. If so, as Matt Heumann said, you will be the odds on favorite to win that with your baseball expertise. Can't wait to dive deeper, but I'm glad you're on board with my future plays there already for Major League Baseball. What about in college football? And we talked about this Thursday night game here coming up. We got two games, obviously, with the national semifinal on Thursday and Friday. Then the NFL takes over center stage here for the entire weekend. What a 5 days of football, Jensen, it's going to be. What plays do you already have in pocket for VSiN Pro subscribers?
Yeah, nothing yet, but I am going to get to the Ole Miss side. It's just a matter of how much I want to monetize my 33-1 future there for Miami to win the national title. Again, 3.5s earlier today on our show, halfway through our show, those are gone in most places for Ole Miss. So again, it'll probably be, and I know I'm probably in the minority on the teasing of college sides here, but just knowing where my position is, I'll likely have part of a bet more on just the money line in and of itself. And then whether I do a standalone on the spread or tease that up and then be able to have a wealth of options to go to for the game on the following night between Oregon and Indiana. I think that's probably where I'm getting to. So excited to see this one. It's probably going to be an underplay for me too in Miami. And Ole Miss, I don't know if I can play the under in Oregon and Indiana. Don't we feel like those offenses are there for being able to do a little back and forth? Do we get a little regression? I mean, I think Oregon's offense way better suited on both sides, whether rushing or passing, for what Indiana just saw with Alabama.
I agree. I think we might get points there. And the other thing about Cignetti, we saw this in the Alabama game, right? They broke their will in the second half to compete. They did. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And that didn't mean they didn't stop. They kept running it and running it and running it right down their throats. So that's what Cignetti's looking to do. I don't think he's calling off the dogs. That could get me to an overplay as well. Don't have that in pocket. I did lay the 4 with Indiana earlier, and that's down to 3.5. So I didn't even get the best of that number. But that will of Indiana right now looks pretty impressive to me. And I do think because of that, he's not looking to bleed the clock and get out of Dodge. He's looking to score, and score more. 46.5 is that total. Jensen, great stuff as always, my friend. Can't wait to break down these games in earnest even more tomorrow and as the week continues. If you've been watching here on FanDuel Sports Network, we appreciate you. You want more VSiN? Go to VSiN.com, the VSiN Watch app. We've got Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidwin. They are coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.